is episode 34, and I'm your host, Salvatore. On today's episode, we'll be talking with Carolyn Acker, who is the founder of Pathways to Education and is the current interim ED at an organization that I'm currently working at called For Youth Initiative. I'm very excited to have Carolyn on the show today. I know she's very passionate about the work that she does, so I'm really excited to start this conversation. Carolyn, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, so I'm Carolyn Acker, and you know, when I left high school, I went to nursing school. So I started my career as a nurse and did a lot of hospital work, then community health. And then, you know, I went back to school and studied business because I became a supervisor. And I did a master's in applied behavioral science, which is really about large system change. And that's when I went to the Regent Park Community Health Center and became the executive director there.
So thank you for that. Thank you for taking the time out to speak with me. I know you're very busy. Let's just dive right into it. The first question, can you please explain what For Youth Initiative is and what services it offers youth?
Well, For Youth Initiative is a not-for-profit organization in a very low-income community with mostly marginalized youth. They're all young people, new immigrants coming from all over the world and face a lot of stigma due to their color, their inability to speak the language right away, and poverty. Poverty is the big factor. And what we do here is we know that children that have that come from low-income communities, actually, it's the educational outcome is tied to the socioeconomic status of the family. And the school's been trying for 30, 40 years to change that, and they haven't really been able to change it. The most robust indicators of educational outcome are income and status, more or less. Mm-hmm. Education, income and education. So we wanted to break the cycle of poverty at Regent Park, and I like to come here because I see you're doing much similar work. So young people coming from poverty really don't have anybody to help them with their homework. They face great challenges because they don't have an aunt or an uncle or who's an accountant or a lawyer or anything like that, or a scientist where they can get help with their physics and their math and in their English, Shakespeare and all that. So that's one of the areas that For Youth Initiative supports youth. The other area is they lack opportunity and the mentorship that comes from associating with people who've come from different backgrounds. So the mentorship. And each of our staff mentors the young people, but they also link them to mentors in areas of their interest. And that allows a young person to be able to ask questions. How did you become a lawyer? How did you become a plumber? How do you do that? What do I have to do to get there? And really, For Youth Initiative, the design of the programs here, the programs are designed to help young people graduate high school and get into post-secondary, whether that's college, university, or an apprenticeship program, and become productive citizens or employment. They might go right to employment, and we help them with that too. So we're helping these young people overcome the obstacles and barriers to success that we take for granted. Example, when you apply to university, it costs over $100 to apply to three universities. Low-income kids do not have that. So there's just so many invisible barriers.
It sounds like, you know, For Youth Initiative is really creating that safe space for the youth in the community and really allowing youth to have access to opportunities that, you know, I think is right to say more privileged youth have access to. And it's really trying to break down those systemic barriers that are currently in place right now.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yes, and for Youth Initiatives, Youth Justice Program receives referrals from the court system, from police officers, from principals, and we work with the youth and their family, and I am so impressed with how many charges get dismissed and how many of these young people we get re-enrolled in school or back to work, get them full-time and help them access and get full-time employment. And this is how they can turn their lives around. You shouldn't be condemned for making one mistake. And we all do this kind of thing. We all make mistakes. But when you have financial resources, the mistake you make when you're from a middle-class family is different than when you're really low income and you make the same mistake. It's fascinating to see, but that's how it works. That's how the system works. And especially if your parents don't understand the court system or the justice system because they're new immigrants, it's even worse.
Yeah, it makes it that much more complicated for them.
And so then those young mm-hmm. people are part of, so we've got quite a broad range. In fact, we serve youth from age 13 to 29, and that's a big challenge.
It is a big challenge. I have to say, you know, in my time working here, one of the unique things that I found that 4 Youth Initiative does is offers this greater amount of wraparound support. So you can, right? Like, and you know, our case management is, you know, very strong here, where we're really taking that individualized approach to the youth's needs. And, you know, you can be a youth, part of our youth justice, you know, program, but we'll still help you, you know, get a job and go to the employment side of our, you know, organization as well. So it's really offering that.
You get re-enrolled in an adult ed to get your GED if you don't have it, and all kinds of things like that to get back on track.
Yeah, it's really, you know, for me, I've noticed we really try to build youth up for success.
Yes, and that case management model that you talked about. So every youth that comes here has one of our workers meet them, do an assessment, make a plan with them. They set up their goals based on using the SMART system of goal setting so that they're achievable and realistic. And we check every 4 months to see how they're progressing, whether they're on track or off track. If we give them a little nudge back on track, it works. And it really is an individualized approach. So they're getting as much support as we can provide them.
And I think it's so unique because some case management models don't do the 4 month thing. They do the 6 months. And I think the 4 month piece is so important because we're really there to kind of track that progress. And if they go off their path just a little bit, we're there, okay, well, let's steer you back where you are. So I found it very, you know, useful when working with youth.
Yes, it's great. It's great. So they do a whole reassessment every 4 months to see how are we doing.
So, you know, I've noticed from my time working in the community that, in the York Southwestern community, that it has one of the lowest graduation rates of high school and post-secondary, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
How does 4 Youth Initiative address that as a community issue?
Well, we do as much outreach as we can. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, right now we're outreaching to the grade eights because we want those grade eights to know what it's going to be like when they go to high school and that we are here for them. And we're also outreaching right now to the grade 11s and 12s so that they know we can help them access post-secondary and even secure a part-time job. Because we're doing that too. We're helping the young people. They can get into university, they get in, or college, or an apprenticeship. I talked to a young man the other day who really excited me. He's going to be a plumber. He's gotten a plumber apprenticeship, which is marvelous. So it's good that way.
It sounds like, you know, some of the work we do here is really, you know, part of that building up success is talking with youth at an early age, so that they have those structures already in place for them as they start, you know, to become older youth, which I find is sometimes lacking in a lot of services that are offered to youth.
Yeah.
They'll just, and I think it's the uniqueness of our organization because we deal with such a broad range of age, right? You know, some agencies just will deal with, let's say, 16 to 18, where, you know, we're following the youth throughout their whole young person life, in a sense.
Yeah, to making that complete transition, yes, into adulthood and helping them become successful, productive citizens of Canada, which they all want to be. Yeah. They love Canada, but they need us to help them point out the opportunities and help them. They don't have an old boys network. And our father can't phone somebody up and help them get a job, but we can.
Yeah, exactly.
So, That's what we're doing here, and that's really what appealed to me so much.
I think it's also, you know, just talking about hope in a sense. Sometimes when you live in a low-income neighborhood and you're marginalized, you have this idea that, you know, you could only be or do what society tells you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They believe that. You see, one of the young people in Pathways said to us, how do we not live up to the stereotype, or down, how do we not live down to the stereotypes that the, you know, the majority have about us? And I thought that was a brilliant comment coming from this young man. Yes, and the other thing that I learned was I had a fellow teaching Ainsworth Morgan was teaching at Nelson Mandela Park Public School his first year. He had a split grade 7 and 8 class, and he happened to be a young man who grew up in Regent Park. Mm-hmm. He had a very strict mother. He was an athlete, you know, one in a million. He made it to university on a football scholarship, and he played for the CFL. And when he retired, he said, I want to go to teacher's college, and I want to go back and teach in my neighborhood. When he told his grade 7 and 8 kids that he grew up in Regent Park, they looked at him in disbelief. And they said, no way, sir, you can't become a teacher and come from here. Now, if you can't even dream, so yeah. That kind of thing really disturbed me to no end, to think these young people in grade 8, they can't see them. They're no different from me and you. They're no different. They're no different. And let's give them a hand up, and let's change the culture of despair, yes, into one of hope.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I shared a... I have a similar experience. So, you know, I have a learning disability, and, you know, in grade 8 was one of the first times that I got an A. Was the first time. And I remember, you know, the teacher had told the class, and they all looked shocked. You know, I used to sit at the back of the class, as most people with learning disabilities probably do. And they all looked at me, right? And again, it's about building that hopes and those dreams, you know, getting to that place where, you know you're meant to be. So I totally get that on, you know, that frontline base, and, you know, how what some of the youth go through with that.
You know, they can feel shame, and we don't want them to feel shame, because shame is a horrible emotion. And society, through many microaggressions, causes this shame.
Yes.
Because you bump into this all over the place. The way a policeman might deal with you is different. The way the teacher might deal with you is different. You tend to get streamed into the low academic side if you're low income. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on that we want to bust, because these kids are the same as me and you.
Exactly. How, and I don't know if you'll be able to speak to it, but what advice would you give a frontline worker working in a low-income neighborhood to kind of combat that shame and, you know, kind of mentor youth to work beyond that?
Well, I think it takes a period of time, and I will tell you that we did it in Regent Park. It took about 5 years. No, it took maybe more than five. It took about 7 years, 8 years. And the kids came and told us that the conversation changed in Regent Park. It wasn't about drug dealing anymore. It was about, what college or university are you guys going to go to? And I couldn't believe it. But it was because of the steady support. They need support all the way through high school and into post-secondary. They're lonely, they're isolated, and we become their family. And it takes a village, and so we're part of the village that's raising these young people. And we have to tell them that they're smart, because so many of them don't believe how they're so smart, and they have no idea how smart they are. I was talking to one of our young people over here in the driveway one day about left and right, and he was so smart. He said to me, you know, they all meet in the middle. They meet. I said, you are absolutely right. Oh, my goodness. How smart is this young man?
Yeah, so, yes. I can totally relate. There's a lot of youth that I've talked to in our space that don't see, you know, the capability they
don't
have.
See it. No, because they've been told that they can't make it.
Exactly.
They won't succeed. And it might not be in those words, but it could be in many subtle ways.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of the things that 4Youth Initiative really does, because we follow them throughout, you know, their whole young life. We're there, you know, for that support and that mentorship and, you know, constantly, you know, building them up and saying you do have that capability, you know, kind of forget about those systemic barriers, you know, those will always be in place, but let's get you to a place where you see yourself.
It's important that we help these young people succeed, because if we don't help them graduate high school and move on to post-secondary, we will not have broken the cycle of poverty for them. And this has a second-generation impact. Mm-hmm. If they succeed at school, their children will succeed at school. And we just have to continue to create this culture. And we have to do more and more and more to help this group, our Aboriginals and our lowest-income kids, make it through high school and get into some sort of post-secondary so that they can work and be productive members of society, because it's very difficult. You know the statistics, the jails are full of people without their high school diploma, and really, what job can you get without a high school? And the knowledge economy is just taking over, and the digital world is taking over, and so we can help them with all of those things.
I just want to switch gears just a little bit and kind of just talk about some of the challenges, because you've been in the field for quite some time and you've been very successful. Some of the challenges that organizations like, or NGOs like FYI may be facing, and how do we, I guess, as social workers or, you know, people in higher positions address those challenges to make these services more better?
Well, you really have to involve the young people. Everything we do should be driven by them. So you need to do focus groups, you get them involved, you find out what are the obstacles to their moving forward. And although they all seem to lack these things that Pathways offers, which is the academic and the social capital support and all that, that makes perfect sense. But they could have other issues going on, and you don't know that unless you really involve them. But we don't just want to involve them individually. We want to put them in a group because they start to think differently in a group.
Yes.
They feed off each other. They'll get an idea from somebody. They'll realize how different they are, and they can realize how smart they are.
So.
And that it's okay to be different, to think differently.
Yes.
And it's great. The more different, the better. Even though our natural human tendency is to want sameness, I can't stand sameness myself.
Same. I've always been the black sheep. So really what we're saying is one of the biggest things NGOs who are working with youth can do is really, you know, evolve youth in that programming, have those focus groups. And, you know, it's music to my ears. You're preaching to, what's the phrase? You're preaching to the choir.
Converted. Or choir. You're singing to the choir.
Whatever it is, a lot of my, you know, advocacy work and a lot of my research has been very much grounded in that youth participation and the importance of youth voice. So happy you said that, because it's really, you know, my grounding in the work that I've done and I do. So I do know the value of that. And I hope the listeners will understand the value of it after today's conversation.
So do I.
What are your hopes for FYI in the future? What are you hoping for Youth Initiative to have the impact on the community?
Well, you know, it's really difficult to fundraise for almost every penny of operations.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do have programs from government that will, you know, the Black Youth Action Plan and various programs for newcomers where you're just constantly going after pots of money here and there. There's money put into the early years, the 0 to 6, and that is crucial and that is very, very important. But as a society, we don't necessarily see the importance of helping low-income kids make it through those key transitions, not just from birth to six, but it's a key transition for a human when you go from grade 8 into grade 9. The move, a lot of kids don't make that transition successfully, and that can haunt you for a long time. And the next big, big one that we want them to make successfully, that's why we want to be there for them, is to go from high school into post-secondary. They don't, you know, there's not a lot of recognition that those are really crucial. So we don't have core funding here, and it really makes it hard. We have some core funding from the United Way, and every funder wants to fund a project. No funder wants to pay the $70,000 we have to pay for the rent, or the salary of a CEO, or a director, or a manager. But you know what? That's the way it works.
Yeah.
You can have high quality programming, and you, unless you monitor the outcomes and you make sure that you are moving towards the goals that you want, that you're making a difference. There are programs that operate that you wonder, what difference did that program make? And I know for a fact that if your own child asks you, can I play basketball? You're going to say, sure you can, as long as your marks stay where they are. Mm-hmm. If you get into that and you start deteriorating, you're going to have to quit. We don't seem to do that with low-income kids. We offer them a music program and a basketball program, but we don't say, hey, you got to get through high school. So the most important job of an adolescent is to get through high school and get into some sort of post-secondary. So that's the challenge for FYI. Mm-hmm. Also, the area we are in is a very underserved kind of a community with a lot of industry and warehouses. Yes. And it's a strange kind of area, isn't it?
It is an odd mm-hmm. placement of things.
But you have all kinds of brand new immigrants here.
Yes.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to serve those kids. But it's really hard when you're fundraising all the time. Yeah. And you have to prove over and over and over, you know,
that we make a difference.
That we make a difference. Yeah.
So it sounds like, and I've learned this since my time working with you, outcomes are crucial. Are crucial. They are the thing.
I'll tell you why they are the thing. Because if you can calculate the outcomes, how many students graduated high school, how many access post-secondary, and you actually know the money you're spending to make that happen, you can do a cost-benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. And that's when you can go fundraising and say, every dollar you donate in here is going to generate $25 back to society. Because this young person won't be in jail. They'll be working. They'll be paying taxes. They won't be collecting money. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the second generation impact is phenomenal. Yeah. And you got to count that. And that the only way you can do that kind of an analysis of your work is if you have solid outcomes, that, like graduating high school and going into post-secondary.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, my past work in working with youth and, you know, on various projects, one of my first things I talk to them about is, how are you measuring the success? How do you know what success looks like for you? Because, you know, I've always wanted to get my youth, you know, that I've worked with in the past to get to a place where they're not dependent on me. You know, you're not going to be a youth forever.
That's right.
And you're not going to have access, let's say, to youth grants forever.
Yes.
So you have to start at the early stage on what does success look like? What are those outcomes? So when you do transition to that adult, when you do want to grow whatever you're growing, you're able to do it. Mm-hmm. You're able to prove the impact you're having on your community.
Yeah, that's right. And by involving the young people in your program design, then they will come then if they've been involved and they tell you what they need and they want. And then you have real buy-in and real commitment.
Yeah, absolutely agree. We're close to the end of the podcast, so I'm going to ask you what happens to be your Right to Speak's trademark question. Mm-hmm. What does advocacy mean to you?
Well, you know, I haven't said this yet, and I'm going to say this. Mm-hmm. You know, I was raised by parents who were immigrants at around 1912, so close to the turn of the century. And as Italian immigrants to this country, they told me how their lives were. They were very poor, and they faced an awful lot of discrimination. And my father actually taught me about social justice and those kinds of things. And it's embedded in me to try and help the people who need it the most. But it's the injustice that really gets me going. And I get quite fired up about it. When people actually assume that these young people don't have anything to offer, then I want to prove to you that they certainly do, and they're no different from you. And for me, advocacy is about helping overcome the obstacles that these young people face and trying to make systemic change at the large system. Mm-hmm. But some of us can do this when we're advocating for and with. We should never do it for. We need to do it for and with. I remember one of the residents of Regent Park said to me, you know, you don't walk in front of us or behind us. Actually, you walk right beside us. And I thought that was a good analogy of advocacy. So you teach young people what their rights are and what their responsibilities are and how to stand up. And you know, the kids in Pathways said one of the most important things they learned was how to ask for help. They don't even realize that they're entitled to a good education, and they can ask the teacher, how can I get a better mark in here, in this class? How can I, and how can you help me with this? And one of the girls slept in, missed an exam. She was so tired, she studied all night long. She was at U of T, she slept in, missed the exam, woke up and thought, oh my God. And then she said, Pathways, oh yeah, I know what I learned. She phoned up the professor, she explained the situation, he scheduled a time for her to write that exam. So this is resiliency. We don't care how many times you fall down, we just want you to get back up.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm so happy you've kind of defined advocacy that way, because one of my role models, the Ontario Provincial Advocate, you know, has defined it that way, and I've learned a lot of my advocacy from him. And he, you know, he's explained it to me that advocacy is really looking at the young person's needs. So it's sometimes you're walking in front of them, sometimes you're walking behind them, sometimes you're walking beside them. It's what they need in that moment.
That's right. That's right.
I love it. So we're about to wrap up. Is there anything else you would like to say?
No, I just think I would like to have more people out there concerned about the high school dropout rates we have in our lowest income communities, and get out there and tutor these kids and help them make it.
Well, thank you again for taking time out to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for asking me. I appreciate it also.
Your right to speak will be posted on the second Wednesday of every month. If you're a child or youth that would like to be on the show, or if you have an idea of what topic you think we should be talking about, you can email me at yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. That's yourrighttospeak@gmail.com. Let's raise awareness together.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.